Is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. Thanks for joining. Nations constantly tell stories about themselves, and one way they do that is by labeling things. Public spaces like parks, schools, and lakes all describe who we are to ourselves by the titles that we give them. In Michigan and across the country, a number of things we honor and glorify are related to people and things that have been pretty nasty, or that carry hateful messages in and of themselves. The most obvious examples, of course, are those of Confederate statues glorifying people who endorsed and abetted slavery. But there are also examples of titles that are simply offensive. In November 2021, Deb Haaland, United States Secretary of the Interior, officially declared the word squaw to be a derogatory term against Native American women. And she created a task force to formally begin removing it from federal use. That slur, which was scattered across many Michigan lakes, has now been removed from more than 30 Michigan landmarks. And recently, the Michigan Department of Natural Resources decided to rename a boat launch in Oakland County to Paint Lake. So why is this happening now? What are the consequences of changing the titles of our public spaces to things that are more positive, or at least less offensive? And what is the state doing to try to create more inclusive, positive environments for everyone? To discuss these things, we've got two great guests with us. Ron Olson is the chief of the Parks and Recreation Division of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. Ron, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me on.
Also with us is Sierra Clark, a former Indigenous Affairs reporter at the Traverse City Record Eagle. She's now a reporting specialist for Miigwech, Inc., and is Anishinaabe, I think I got that right, from the Grand Traverse Bay area. Sierra, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah. Ron, I'm going to start with you. Talk about why the Michigan Department of Natural Resources decided to change the Oakland County Lake name.
Well, we, as you described, there has been a larger process from the federal level, and we adopted what they were doing to examine the all of the properties that we have, wildlife areas, forest parks, boating access sites, and the like, to determine which of them would be fit in the category of being offensive, if you will. And one of the things that some people don't know is lake names are set up and established by the U.S. Geological Survey, and they also embarked upon the same idea or the same concept of assessing names to determine which names of lakes were inappropriate and needed to be changed. Well, one of those was the lake in Oakland County that was named Squaw Lake, and consequently the boat launch. Usually we name boat launches associated with the name of the lake, and that hit our list at the same time it hit their list, and the name of the lake was identified to be changed to Paint Lake, and so consequently, in partnership with them, we took an affirmative step in our rulemaking to develop what we call a land use order, which has been in the process, and that'll be finalized in a week here, through an order that'll be signed, and then the name will be officially changed to the Paint Lake Boating Access Site. So, but by the way, we did analyze all the other names and entities that we have across that, but this was one definitely that jumped out because of the word squaw.
Yeah. So, Sierra, I want to bring you into the conversation here. You and I have talked in the past about the many ways in which the state of Michigan and other jurisdictions really have a lot of work to do repairing damage that has been done to Native nations. I want to go back first to get the name of the nation, the First Nation that you belong to, right, Anishinaabe, which is a group of cultures and people that is kind of collected here in the Great Lakes. But I want to get your reaction to what Ron Olson is talking about and a sense of how much repair can be done by renaming these things.
Yeah, so I am Anishinaabe, which is of the Three Fires Confederacy, that includes the Odawa, Ojibwe, and Potawatomi nations. I'm more particularly from the Grand Traverse Band of Odawa and Ojibwe in Traverse City. Kind of going off of that, this word is derived from the Algonquin language of the word Esqua, loosely translating to women, young girl. But as we've seen throughout history, with many Native names and words, it was stolen and then it was perverted. And it turned into a really broad racial slur, a caricature that removed individual identity and dignity from women of Native American heritage. Mm-hmm. So the earliest uses of the word, historians do agree that it was not used in a derogatory way, but we look at throughout history on the views of Native people, and it's always been in the white opinion of Natives being savages and heathens, and this includes the S word describing Native women. Violence against Native American women is rooted in history, and it persists through the continued portrayal of us, with the example of the use of these slur names in places. So, it is a first step. I have to agree, it is a first step in making and change, but it's one of many steps that need to be made.
Yeah. So I need to admit that I did not know that this was an offensive term until I feel like it was maybe a year or so ago that one of the producers here on the program told me that this was an offensive name. And that reminds me that there are blind spots that I think a lot of people walk around with who are not part of First Nations or Native communities, and we don't think about what those words mean. We grow up with them because they're familiar and they're used by the people who teach us, about our places and our state. But Sierra, it seems like that's a difficulty as well, getting people to understand, right?
Yeah, well, it's because society looks past us and continues to put the opinion of Native peoples, especially Native women's, at the very, very bottom. It's never been appropriate, but white hands have always dictated for us and spoken for us. Native American bodies, especially Native women and Two-Spirit, are used how white America sees fit. So what has been lost in this discussion about renaming places is the genocide that these places have seen. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the genocide of burned settlements and the body counts of my ancestors, but the genocide of forced assimilation and the stamping out of ceremonies and traditions and the elimination of our languages. Specifically speaking here in Michigan, Anishinaabe Mohan, before these places were named with the S word, they had Anishinaabe names that were eradicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Ron, give me a sense of how the DNR is working with Indigenous people and Indigenous nations to talk about the way that we not only name things, but also the ownership of land and the issues there and all of the things that we kind of have to go back and rethink or redo.
Well, the DNR has, Department of Natural Resources, does have a staff member who is a tribal liaison, and there is a linkage between that person and the tribal leadership. And then there are other times when certain things, like, for example, in the Thumb area, we manage the Petroglyphs State Park, if you will, and it's a remnant of petroglyphs, and we work very closely with our history division and the tribes on that particular focused area, because it does have a lot of historical and cultural significance on a very focused basis. But and obviously in this past year and a couple of years, there's been tribal negotiations on the agreement between the tribes and the state of Michigan, and that has gone on for quite some time, and there's an agreement that's pending, and I believe it's in some litigation right now. So there isn't a lot of active engagement from not only the tribal treaty agreements and updating them, as well as ongoing engagement, you know, such as the petroglyphs and other kinds of specific things that we work with that do impact the and come up against tribal things. Plus, we also have a lot of very, very precise archaeological programs, and as we do projects and different things, we spend a lot of time making sure that if there is any evidence of archaeological, historical Native American settlements or whatnot, that those are very highly respected and considered in all of our design work. So, you know, is it perfect? Probably not, but the process, those are some of the process pieces we have in place.
Yeah. Sierra, we've only got about a minute and a half left, but I want to give you a chance. I started the segment talking about storytelling and the way that we tell our own stories. It seems to me that one of the answers here to the lack of understanding and knowledge about these things is journalism, and having more journalists be able to tell this story from the standpoint of members of First Nations. And I wanted to give you the chance just to talk about the importance of the kind of work that you do trying to educate the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. It's really important to listen to Native peoples and get their perspective. You know, when you have stories written by hands of those who don't belong to a culture or the nation, that perspective isn't going to be 100%. I speak for myself. I'm not speaking for the entire nation of the Anishinaabe. I'm just speaking as an Odawa woman from northern Michigan. My experiences of what I've learned from my elders and my community, and researched as an amateur researcher through journalism. But it's really important to really put the voices of Native peoples on the forefront when we're discussing these kinds of issues. And I do just want to say that that this is not really anything new. Mm-hmm. This name change is just following what has been going on since the 60s and 70s with the Interior Department. They have replaced place names that contained slurs for Black and Japanese people.
Sure.
And it's just a continuation of changing these outdated terms that are no longer appropriate.
Yeah.
So as a Native woman, I just want to say that our voices and our opinions matter.
Yes, of course they do. Sierra Clark, it's always great to have you here with us. Thanks for joining us on Detroit Today. And Ron Olson of the DNR, great to have you here as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to talk about Detroit's proposed land value tax, which tries to incentivize people to build on vacant land that they own. Also promises to change the tax structure a little for those of us who are Detroit taxpayers. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.